Thanks for tuning in to the Glossy Podcast. I'm your host, Jill Manoff, and today I sit down with Seth Weiser and Gerard Maione, the co-founders of luxury resale company What Goes Around Comes Around. Resale is decidedly having a moment, but Wagaka, which is what the cool kids call it, has been around for more than 30 years. I wanted to ask Seth and Gerard about the evolution of their business, which started with a single celeb-beloved storefront in New York City's Soho. I also wanted to learn how they're responding to luxury's recent heightened exclusivity now that Chanel is jacking up prices all the time and people are suing Hermes just to get their hands on a Birkin. Welcome to you, Seth.
Hi, Jill. Nice to see you.
So excited to have you. Hi, Gerard. How are you?
Hi, Jill. I'm so well. Looking forward to this. Thank you for having us.
Of course, it'll be fun. Let's talk about this. I mean, we hear that brands are becoming more inclusive, and yet we're seeing evidence to the contrary. What can you tell me about the resulting customer behavior, all these shenanigans about prices and such? Is it having a good impact on the biz?
I think for us, it's been a benefit, of course, because customers want what they want. And so when the brands, with their exclusivity and their, interesting practices, make it harder for the consumer to kind of get exactly what they want when they want it, the consumer's then looking for choices. And of course, you can't really buy it from the brand, then you're going to have to buy things from the secondary market. And for us, that's kind of been a bellwether to help people, enter the pre-owned funnel, to enter the vintage funnel, both from the standpoint of whether they can get what they want now, or a lot of these products are discontinued and they aren't even available anymore from the brand. So it's a kind of two-way street in terms of how it's trickling down to us. I know Gerard's in the stores and probably sees it a lot more than I do. Gerard, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, listen, it's definitely, I mean, it's where the wave has gone. I mean, for us, this has been 30 years in the making, but as now there's so many players in the market, I think it's also just the acceptability that most people really look to the secondary market. It's just having that accessibility and having, the options. And I think it's, it's obviously worked into our sweet spot, and it's, I think it's something with all the brands being so close to the chest, it's only going to be a better scenario for us for sure.
For sure. Let's circle back really quickly to what was happening 30 years ago and the resale landscape at the time. And first of all, what brought you guys together?
So, it's a lovely story. Seth and I went to college back in the day at Syracuse. We were friends there and, moved into the city, and we had our whole crew. And we were the two unique ones that were very much into style and fashion. And, we were basically out in the nightlife scene, a good 5 to 6 nights a week. And, at that point, just in general with being entry level positions, in our careers and not really, making a lot of money and having, the ability to really go to, the designer stores and Bergdorf and, just some of these places that we might have been, inspired and aspired to be. And I was on a side note working at Ralph Lauren at the mansion on 72nd and Madison, which was a great education, into fashion. I was taking classes at Parsons for fashion design at the time. And, so it was very eye opening in terms of the whole shopping experience and ambiance. But Seth and I, kind of like wanting to be like, kind of the cool, cool style little icons. We were going to all, at that point in 1993, it wasn't called resale per se. It wasn't called pre-owned. It was really vintage. And so at that time we were going to flea markets and vintage stores. And, there was just really, it was just about extracting these cool pieces and just like, finding this individuality style, but also at a competitive, amazing price, resourceful price. We're like, oh my God, we just got this leather jacket for $79, blah, blah, blah. And so, with all that said, this was over a couple of year span, and, we were kind of building our wardrobes and getting a lot of commentary and a lot of people in the know being like, where are you guys getting this stuff? Like super cool, super fly. And so, so it basically clicked in our minds where Seth and I were like, there could be a business here to be had. And we were deciding, like, do we do like private appointment in our apartments and like curate from these vintage stores and flea markets, you know, a point of view? Because the fact was there was no point of view in these stores. I mean, there was no merchandising, no service, you know, no curation. And it basically led us to the point of taking a major leap of taking a lease at 351 West Broadway, which was a major deal for us against our, you know, some of our dad's wishes, but our moms were behind us. And, you know, that was like the beginning of it all. But the whole impetus and the whole, you know, DNA of what we still do today, 30 years later, was about having that point of view, you know, the curation, the high level service, and just really that ambiance and feeling in the store to make that experience, you know, what it is and what we've been pouring, you know, through these 30 years. Yeah.
And really built on brick and mortar. I have to say, I'm fangirling, but I can remember, I've been going to Fashion Week for 20 years, and I can remember coming in with my business partner and talk about like entry level. We would have to, that was a must stop store for us. And we would drool over the the concert t-shirts that we couldn't afford because we weren't yet there. but it was, I mean, the celebrity factor, like all the cool girls went, and the, I guess they weren't called influencers at the time, but talk to me about the importance of that. And did celebs play a role in the popularity, would you say? And is that still the case?
I mean, I think early on, it was only the kind of high fashion set that really kind of appreciated what we were doing. I mean, fortunately, that set acknowledged us early, and we had early features in the New York Times and Vogue. And I think that shortly after that, like, people started to kind of permeate in and out and start to get involved. And the fashion designers were always very influenced by fashion and vintage. So it was not long after we opened that we first saw our friend Jean-Paul Gaultier as one of the first like major designer celebrities that kind of started shopping with us. And he shopped with us now for, you know, the past 30 years. And I think that everyone was always looking for that sense of individuality that vintage really kind of offered. And that plus the integrity of the design, the integrity of the quality of the bygone era was also something that was starting to come more and more kind of rare in the mass merchant, like high fashion, fast fashion world that was evolving around us. And over not so long after that, you know, from, you know, celebrities starting to come in and start to collect it and appreciate it and wear it, the magazines started to want to include vintage in the stories they were telling. And even then, other retailers started to want to incorporate that into their, you know, offering. Ralph Lauren being one of the early examples with the RRL brand. We were one of the biggest suppliers of that brand for years in terms of the authentic vintage that they would put in the stores next to their actual product. And I think the kind of combination these different influences were things that we were in the mix of and started to then cross over to then eventually like David and Victoria Beckham being really good clients of ours. And, you know, the supermodels like Kate and Naomi started shopping with us, and we started to find, you know, the overall, you know, precursor to the internet, because this is still pre-internet, you got to remember, in the 90s, whereas more truly a word of mouth that was starting to get out about people want to come to what, see what we were offering, just like you did. It was really in a certain circle that we created an incredible awareness of what we were up to.
Yes. Let's talk about the evolution. E-commerce came about. Did you guys lean in? And prior to that, was it just you became a destination? Were you constantly getting like also like phone orders and like you could see that there was demand outside of the New York City limits?
I mean, we've always had an interesting like secondary wholesale business as part of our like secret sauce. And even back then it was selling to Ralph, like I mentioned, but we also worked with, you know, DKNY. We worked with Urban Outfitters. And I think a lot of people have started to see what we're up to. When eBay first came on the scene, you know, it definitely disrupted resale across the country. And because people in every small town in America then had access to showcase product around the world. And as, you know, eventually we knew we had to become more participatory with like e-commerce in general, eventually, you know, as that sector became more and more evident, we leaned in over the last kind of 10 to 15 years, more so than the first half of our career, into really making sure that was part of our long-term strategy.
Yes. You've got this amazing partnership happening with Amazon. Tell me about why you chose to go there. Is that an exclusive partnership of sorts? What's happening?
You know, it was an interesting foray, and, you know, where Seth mentioned or some of our wholesale dynamic, you know, when we did really start shifting from true vintage and heritage vintage over to luxury and basically have the first foray into, you know, luxury handbags and jewelry and really, you know, kind of incorporating that wholesale model, Shopop was really the first customer that we had. I think it was back in 2009. And, you know, Seth, I know, had a very big pulse when putting some of the products up there. And basically within literally like minutes, stuff was selling and selling out. And we're like, wow, this is really interesting. And, you know, that really led into, you know, the more luxury wholesale dynamic. And as you looked at the eventual landscape and, you know, obviously Shopop then being, you know, bought by Amazon and whatnot, you know, this was something really about like 6 years ago where we knew obviously they were the powerhouse and obviously knew they didn't have access to, you know, or weren't going to have any access, of course, to any of the fashion houses and high level luxury brands. So as, you know, we kind of said, okay, what's the path and how, you know, is this something maybe we can obtain an exclusivity and some alliance, you know, with Amazon to actually be, you know, the one that was, you know, could be the partner for them. And, you know, there was a lot of meetings and this was literally years, because the truth of the matter is we wanted to ensure that delivering that kind of level and breadth of luxury inventory representing all brands, that would have to be something that was trusted, something that had consistency in pricing, in condition. And, you know, Amazon being really the marketplace, you know, typical marketplace scenario, we were like, you know, we really need this to be exclusive. And, you know, over time, basically this about a year ago, it's now been, you know, we signed the deal and basically have become, you know, the true partner for Amazon Luxury Stores, which has been a wonderful, you know, it's been great and only growing at this point.
Great. Is it a different scenario than maybe it hits Shopop, it flies off the shelves? What's been the success of this partnership?
I think the type of audience, obviously, that Amazon generates is unprecedented. Even now, seeing the type of traffic and their ability to kind of bring you to the customer looking for your offering is one of their, you know, specialties. And I think we've been, you know, learning more about the ecosystem, so to speak, in terms of how to work most effectively with Amazon. And they've been incredibly supportive of us as a brand and working with us to ensure that, you know, their customers who they know are looking for our product are now kind of being directed carefully and smartly into the luxury stores. That's such a big initiative. As you know, Amazon's been pushing fashion and luxury for a long time. So us being able to, you know, create an access point for a customer to go buy Louis Vuitton bag or an Hermes bag, it's just really, you know, a perfect match, because that customer, like all customers, are buying something on Amazon. So their ability to then shop with us safely and get authentic products really invalidates the combination. And then it also helps them continue to participate in sustainability, which is such a big part of where the sector has emerged around us as well.
Yes, so smart. Well, Amazon, Shopop, just a few of your partners, like, you're doing a lot behind the scenes where people don't even know you're involved. Talk to me about your, I guess, private, what do you call this B2B business? B2B, I guess. But yeah, what's happening there? And that's, would you say, a majority of your business? And you're working with Dillard's. Who are you working with?
So we would look at them as retail partners. I think for us as a retailer, you know, where we have product in any store, we feel like that's our store to make it successful. And, you know, Dillard's, you know, we've been working with now for just under a decade. And that was like one of the places where we had no idea what to imagine would be happening in department stores, you know, around regions of the country that typically are underserviced in terms of luxury. And what we've discovered is there's a luxury consumer throughout America that's thirsty for an in-store experience. And as much as the internet is a powerful tool. The luxury customer has been trained to want to touch and feel and participate in the experience in person. So I think we've been continuing to lean into that in a unique way with our business strategy and finding the right partners, people like Dillard's, but then going shop up, still an important business for us. We work from, interestingly, a high level like a Kith or a Goop, all the way back down to a Dillard's and Von Maur, two department store chains that are kind of mid-tier to mid to upper, depending on how you want to define them. But that customer had never been allowed to go buy a Vuitton bag at the Dillard's store in, let's say, Little Rock, which is where their headquarters. Now they love it and they're looking for it. And now we've expanded Gucci, we've expanded Prada, and some of the other brands that we know the consumer is looking for. And each of these different partnerships, we really look at, how's our customer experience going to be? How do we service this customer and make that the best experience possible? Because all we want to do is create an accessibility to luxury and an availability in places where the consumer really wants to be part of the luxury conversation.
Is this happening? Your another partner's Disney. Are they shopping at the park? What's happening with Disney?
Yeah, Disney's interesting. So we have a great distribution through a series of different cruise ship operators out there, Carnival, Royal, Celebrity, Virgin, like ships like that. And Disney had seen it, and they obviously have their cruise ship business. So initially we tested it on a couple ships and then put some products at the Epcot Center in the Italian and French pavilions. And it's been incredible, the response we got. And then last fall, we actually moved into the first theme park location at Disneyland. So we opened our first kind of section at a store on Main Street in Disneyland. And the consumer there is hungry for it too.
They're in like souvenir mode. Treat yourself.
They definitely are.
Right. Amazing. Well, Gerard, tell me, I talked to a lot of resale founders, owners. There's a lot of like, we need to get in front of the seller. They're gunning after sellers. They're gunning for these. Some of them working directly with partners, brand partners. They're getting the inventory direct from brands. Where are you sourcing products from?
So, you know, considering it's been 30 years of us procuring, you know, vintage and product across the board and, you know, now heavily into luxury, our networks go far and deep, as you could imagine. You know, the one unique part of our business, which is different from a lot of the models out there, which are predominantly consignment models, we buy and own all of our inventory. On one sense, it's something that we basically believe in what we're purchasing out there. We stand behind it, and it's a very clean process for us. It's not something where your product is lingering with all these different clients out there, and you have to worry about whether you're discounting it or something happens to the product and you're housing it accordingly. And so, you know, we as opposed to going more to the individuals and clients, unless they have an incredible closet, like legendary closet, you know, we have a global sourcing model that reaches into Asia, Europe, and throughout the States. And, you know, it's basically these relationships where we, because of our retail partner base demands, you know, we can't be buying one by one by one. You know, we need to be buying hundreds and thousands of units. And we also, you know, with everything going on out there, you know, we need to know it's trusted sources, and ensuring, you know, authenticity. So, you know, we have various partners, you know, similarly to, we have these great retail partners where we're selling to, we have incredible sourcing partners. And, you know, we're pretty embedded, and it's great. You know, we can kind of turn on the engines, whether it's certain brands, certain styles, and, you know, it's just an incredible communication and network that we built.
Right on. And in addition to supplying your partners, you are supplying more stores. Tell me about, is it three stores now that you have, and why are they all in New York City?
Well, actually, we do have three stores, but one is in Beverly Hills.
Ah, got you.
Across the way. So
diversified,
you know. but you know, I mean, and the thing, our stores really are, I mean, it's obviously where we started. It's really where everyone can, of course, you know, really touch, see, feel, you know, what our experience and what our process is, what our inventory is, and as you had mentioned earlier, West Broadway was the baby of it all and where we started. Beverly Hills, we built out in 2016. We actually had another location prior to that on La Brea in West Hollywood. So there was a path of actually getting out to California. But ultimately, where we knew we had to be was in Beverly Hills and being kind of in the mecca of luxury, where we have an amazing spot on Brighton right off of Rodeo. So that we had built out in 2016. And that was really kind of the, you know, the really showing like the level of what our space, our ambiance, you know, our merchandising and service, you know, so that's, and obviously hitting the Hollywood market and all the stylists and, you know, kind of celebs out there on that end. And while we were, I was in LA, actually, I lived in LA during the pandemic. We had an unfortunate flood in West Broadway, and we decided to do a big renovation we've talked about for years. We took a pop-up on Wooster Street, a 5,000 square foot space, which we ran for about a year. And we were going to close it originally when we finished the West Broadway renovation. And it was performing very well. And we said, wow, we don't really want to close this. We kind of, with the landlord, basically kept it going and said, let's see how we can do with two stores. Even though they're three blocks from each other, we had individual, obviously, you know, one of a kind product that had kind of the demand to go to both locations and also delineate our inventory in certain ways that made people kind of deciding what they were looking for, go to one or the other or both for that matter. And last year in January, we decided to take a big leap as building out, you know, doing a proper build out for Wooster and basically having two stores, you know, next to each other. And it's been great so far. And Seth, maybe you want to even foray into what we've done in the basement with live selling there.
Yeah, I mean, we've always tried to keep an eye on where the cycles were changing from the consumer pattern. And I think that's why we've lasted 30 years as we've been willing to continue to, you know, go where the consumer and the trends were going. And I think that's, you know, we've been through four life cycles of this as a company. You know, the last one where now a sector formed around us and with the resale is kind of maybe the final mature evolution. But within this, there's so many subsets of how people's models are interestingly differentiated within even resale today. What we kind of learned from e-commerce for our business was that the consumer in our stores were always transacting because they wanted that education. They wanted that real-time experience to kind of talk about why should you buy this versus buy that? What's the history and the provenance of these pieces? And we've been seeing how, particularly in the Asian region, you know, live selling was becoming a more and more, you know, active vehicle for every type of commerce. So when we were considering whether to take the new space in Wooster, we knew that this was a huge opportunity for us to consider, you know, opening a studio, investing in the live selling, you know, future. And so one of the other kind of interesting attributes is that as one of the most incredible studios, like we could build out to help represent our brand. And now we're about a little under a year in of starting the broadcast. Now we've started an enterprise partnership with TikTok. We're doing exclusive shows on Amazon through our Amazon partnership. We have shows on Instagram, and we're starting to bring different hosts and personalities on, kind of talk about their vintage experience and talk about why, you know, and where and how they got involved with it. So the live, you know, studio, which is called Wagaka Live for us, is part of the next evolution for us as we kind of enter the next phase of our careers in terms of the next medium that we feel that we're early entrance in to kind of bring it forward to the consumer.
So cool. Are you finding that the shopper from those lives is similar to your core shopper? Are you more international customers?
I mean, it's still definitely a domestic-based customer. And what's interesting about our brand is we have the woman buying their first, you know, pre-owned luxury item at whatever price point it is, kind of finding us and learning and feeling comfortable buying from us. And then we have the most incredible celebrities and collectors who want the most rare and one-of-a-kind and the holy grail pieces. So for us, we actually have probably one of the most diverse audiences of anyone in the world because we're servicing both sides of the ecosystem because we do feel that's part of what we want to do. We don't want to be, we have exclusive product, we have accessible product, And we have some of the most incredible core pieces that everybody is thirsting for in their closet. And some of those are even more popular than the rare pieces.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. You guys make use of your space. Am I making this up? This feels like deja vu, like I'm dreaming it. But did you in your original space have a special space in the basement that was almost like the vault and it had like the goods? Does that still exist?
It does still exist. And it is called the vault.
I was right.
I've been in
the vault. You were like, do you want to come down to the vault? So I was like, don't mind if I do.
And it's had a lot of evolutions over the years, but we did a few years back actually decide to like blow out the, let's say, 1,000 square feet and actually be one beautiful room, like with private VIP. And it's great because we can kind of curate that accordingly to different moments. For Fashion Week, we've been doing suites for Fashion Week where we have influencers come in and, you know, pull looks, obviously create content, and do different little events there and whatnot. So it's, you know, obviously from just the sheer aspect of bringing clients privately down there and even setting up, you know, a kind of customized grouping of what they might be looking for. So yeah, the vault is one of our special places.
That feels special. Tell me about your shopper. They're a luxury shopper. They expect a luxury experience. Like, what does that mean for you? Wining, dining, champagne, any of that? Or like, how do you treat that?
I think we try to raise the service levels as high as we would expect and higher. I think in our stores, the idea that you have a personalization, both from the relationship you can have with our stylist to the experience in the store, is something that we have felt is kind of the old traditional world of, you know, shopping that has become less and less prevalent as mass merchants and brands have become, you know, more about the, you know, vertical integration they have. So for us, that does include champagne. It does include servicing the customer, inviting them to our events, which we do a lot of in-store events, which is unique for Wagaka as a brand, and trying to elevate the personalization that I think for the type of product we have really needs that level of expertise. I mean, we have so many holy grails and truly museum level pieces that sometimes our own eye is our biggest, you know, danger, because we know what's out there. And I think that's our challenge, is to find that balance of which pieces are kind of truly for collectors and people at that level, which is the Chanel jacket that you could be wearing to work or going out with your friends, and then which is the one that you need to wear when you're invited to the couture runway show, as another example. And I think we, because of our 30 years of kind of buying and selling, we really have learned a lot and now incredibly have a database and data sourcing to make more informed decisions of how we kind of run our business. But we're still down on the front line trying to give you, the customer, that kind of incredible experience that you deserve, especially when you're shopping luxury. Like, you're spending that money, you want to walk out feeling incredible and getting that piece that you're going to wear over and over and feel it's just a timeless part of your collection.
I was just going to add something, because like Seth and I think we both for sure want to put it out there and resonate, you know, that within the front line and behind the scenes, you know, we just have such an incredible, passionate team, some that have been with us for quite a long time and really go the distance, you know, to represent this company. At the front line, you know, when we do talk about service, you know, really, and there's just such a great wide array of our individuals, because they really are like stylists, which we've kind of said to you in the past and you've experienced, but they each have their own individual style. They have their own individual personality. And it's also like pairing them with the right clients, you know, that are like, you know, really suited for each other. And we, you know, that's just something that means a lot to us, because that's the big variation of what you really get from quite honestly, walking into a lot of like retail out there that feels very cold, unapproachable, and kind of like you really don't want to spend time, let alone money, in there, you know? And so it's really one of the biggest parts of what we want to present out there is important to us.
It doesn't feel snooty patooty, I will say that. But tell me about how you guys, your workers, I hear a lot of resale companies, a lot of their hires are focused on authentication. Like, is that something that you do in-house? How do you guys message your authenticity in marketing, or how do you speak to it?
I mean, that's the key to the entire science of the business. And we've been incredibly invested in learning about it and kind of making sure that we are always at the forefront as the brands always are changing their, you know, mediums over the years. And we really built an historical kind of encyclopedia, so to speak, that our teams do this. And our teams are doing this literally by human touch. Most of the sector now is reliant on technology and scans and like, does entropy say it's real? Well, then it's real. And, you know, I think it's a valid, you know, cause, but it's not 100%. And I think for us, we've always felt our team and their, you know, incredible passion to the science of authentication has been one of the secrets that have really helped us to feel secure in terms of our representation, the guarantees we offer. And I think more and more, that's, you know, a big part of where we feel we differentiate ourselves, because we really are so passionate about what we do that the last thing we would ever want to do is take risks. And I think we, as a group, say, hey, unless we're 100%, there's no reason that we should take a risk, because we buy everything. It's even more so from us versus marketplaces and consignment companies, or when you're buying peer-to-peer, like, you don't really know. And there's so many other, you know, new entrants into the space that, you know, this took us decades to perfect, and it does not come that quick and easy.
No doubt. Well, what does, you mentioned word of mouth is working wonders. What else is working in marketing? Is it speaking to price? People are looking at affordability. Is it about sustainability? Is it these celebs? Posh is in the store. Is it about brand? Speaking to the brands that you carry, what's working?
Jeez. I mean, it's kind of all of the above.
I mean, it
really is. I think it depends on, you know, kind of where you're targeting, I think. And also, I mean, listen, the core for us is still really, it's the curation, it's the trust, you know, it's just being that like secure name in the industry, because there are, again, so many more players. And, you know, we do believe, I mean, listen, not just because a celebrity is a celebrity always means that, oh, that's the stamp of approval. But I think it's like, it's really the industry. I think that's always been the case. And whether it has been like the designers, the stylist, you know, the really high level clients, I think it's really come down to because of the duration of time and the level that we're constantly pushing the bar. You know, that's the thing, as Seth said, like, whether it's the pieces, the things we've never seen before, and it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, we obviously keep pushing that, but I think, you know, and now that we're doing like a bunch of these events, and now that we could broadcast live, and the fact that, you know, our product is all these doors both globally, you know, domestically, you know, it's not even trying to say, oh, we're trying to be everywhere. We're trying to be in the right places. You know, everything that we do decide is still done with like, you know, tact and a kind of a measuring of like, you know, is this the right thing? Is this the right place to be? And there's just a lot of thought process that goes into all of our decisions as a team, which I think is also maybe when we were younger in the biz, it was more like, you know, say yes to everything. Sometimes you got to say no,
yes.
You know, but you know, that's again, the beauty of like, you know, having our, you know, teams and departments to like, make sure we're doing all the right, making all the right moves.
Yes. Tell me about your teams, the size of the company. How huge are you now?
You know, we're now pushing about 150, you know, people, and that could be plus or minus depending on where we are in the day of the week. We're constantly, you know, moving forward with continuing to invest in the people around us. We know that part of growth is the people, and we continue to want to, you know, empower our people and bring them as part of the future, you know, missions we're on.
Right on. Well, what's challenging you now?
Every day there's a challenge in running our business. So that's a loaded question, to say the least. I think our biggest challenge is always continuing to make sure that people understand what we do and why we're different than everyone else in resale. And that's always a challenge because, you know, there's people who just don't have the history and experience to know about what we are, what we do, and why, you know, we are a better choice in terms of where to buy your pre-owned luxury. For us, we, because of the quality integrity standards that we maintain, often, you know, people don't know the difference between several Chanel bags that may look the same. And I always try to use the car analogy of a used car, like the one with 10,000 miles is going to be much more expensive than the one with 30 or 40. And the same thing applies to vintage or bags or luxury, because the condition of this product falls into the definition of collectability. So for us, like, that sometimes doesn't come across as directly as we want. People in our sector, because a lot of these have been, you know, funded by, you know, private equity or venture capital groups that may not have a direct, you know, path to profitability. We've also been, you know, seeing a lot of our competitors try to, in a way, disrespect these pieces that deserve the respect that we acknowledge they do. So that doesn't always come out correctly. And we're always trying to make sure that that's part of how we can best message, you know, why what goes around is the safest and best place to buy your pre-owned luxury.
Yes. Well, tell me what's next. What's to come this year? I know we did not mention various elements of the business. I know that you launched Home at the Wooster store, Home Products, which is so exciting. I know that you've got this amazing, maybe the largest selection of Levi's, vintage Levi's, which is awesome. Like, any expansions in that realm? Is it about expansion, or what are the goals this year?
You know, I think because we have launched so much, you know, that we have two stores in Soho, you know, the live studio and how we're broadcasting in that sense, and obviously dealing with all the retail partners and whatnot. I think it's actually just, you know, stabilizing, maximizing those opportunities and doing them really well. In terms of like Wooster, where we have introduced some of these, a furniture collaboration with the company Newell, and having stuff for sale and kind of a little bit more of home objects and books and kind of barware and kind of those elements. Cause, you know, we've always been a lifestyle. We've been lifestyle individuals. We feel our people and our clients are lifestylists in their own right. And, you know, we just think it's, you know, more categories is always a great extension. More brands is always a great extension. And if we circle back to our Levi's, you know, both for Seth and I, we've been connoisseurs. We've been lovers of it. We're still buying it. We're still nice. Passionate. And the truth of the matter is it sells. People need it. Denim's not going away. And there's really nobody else. I mean, there's some few places on the planet, but there's not many places where you can go and have like a full-blown selection in your sizes and different, you know, kind of wears and fades of vintage Levi's that are like, you know, pure to the time periods, you know, not just like, you know, 2 years ago denim. But so I just think for us, you know, we are such purists, and, you know, it's once again, just really connecting, you know, the experience of our products and, you know, and our ability to source and really finding the right people on the other side in whichever, you know, medium that kind of, you know, comes down to in whatever channel of business.
Yeah. And I just would, you know, say that, you know, we started live less than a year ago. Amazon's just over a year. A lot of our bigger growth opportunities are still in the, you know, infancy phases for us. And like, one thing we've learned in the past is, you know, don't do too much, because then you won't make them as successful as they can be. So for us, like that, the new Wooster store, and then we're making a heavy investment in technology and, you know, upgrading our systems and our company for, you know, the future growth plans we have, which we do have some big future growth plans, but we need to make sure that the systems and the operations can kind of meet the ideas that we have, because we definitely have incredible growth potential and plan to kind of move forward with that. As we kind of get to the second half of this year and then really moving into a really high gear starting in 2025, as we get those systems to kind of help us become more efficient and more effective at the data process we're going to.
Nice. It's more about data, reading the data that you've got, making new efficiencies around that.
Yeah. And I think getting the technology to kind of meet the unique nature of our business. We've always had to customize a lot because there wasn't really a lot that was designed to handle the unique nature of our products. So we think now it's catching up. And I think we have brought in a new team for tech that kind of take us to the next level where technology is going to take our business.
Nice. Last question. That's just fun. What's everyone buying right now? Is there a bag of the season? What do I need?
I mean, wow.
Is something in demand?
Well, I mean, Seth, you'd say brand wise, there's been a really nice, you know, resurgence with, you know, Fendi and Prada, you know, kind of a lot of the Y2K. I mean, listen, we've always had our core, of course, of, you know, Hermes and Chanel and Louis, but, you know, it's kind of been nice expanding upon the brands and just seeing some, you know, styles, because as we both mentioned, you know, we have a wide diversification of clientele and also age bracket, you know, so there's like your real true classics, which is not to say a younger person or older, it's about who has a classic, but I think some of those, you know, like edgier and some fun styles, you know, which is really nice for some of our, you know, kind of entry late teenager into their 20s, you know, kind of style going on, or the ones who missed it back in the day who are like, oh my God, I remember that. I need that. So, yeah, it's nice to see the expansion, both because it keeps us interested, but it just shows you the breadth and the business opportunities that we have as we enter into new brands.
I like to see Gen Z's interested in luxury resale. They're doing something right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they understand like kind of how this is part of where their participation in sustainability and the idea of like the timeless nature of this product and the quality of this product then is validating why it should continue to recycle. And, you know, that's what's kind of amazing for us. You know, we've been doing this, you know, for 30 years, and those were not the conversation when we started. And we've been part of helping create a cultural change, quite honestly, through our career by getting more and more people into the funnel and to be educated and to appreciate kind of where vintage and pre-owned kind of sits. And now it's becoming more popular than ever. It's been more accepted than ever. And it's an incredible point for us as we're still at this kind of hopefully mid part of our careers to kind of be part of what got us here now to take advantage of the sector and the opportunity that's around us today.
Yes, you guys have hit a really nice stride. It's exciting to follow your path and see all you're up to. Thank you for being here. This was awesome.
Okay, thank you so much. It was great to see you, Jill, and hear you. And we look forward to seeing you again next time you're in New York.
Yes, soon, I hope.
Thank you so much, Jill. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's all for this episode. Our theme music is by Otis McDonald. If you liked this episode, be sure to share it with someone else you think would. Thanks for listening to The Glossy Podcast.